What a great fast blast from Alan in Vancouver, Canada. George, I recall a documented incident reported by two British Airway pilots whose radio conversation was interrupted by 3 minutes of voice chatter between two World War II pilots. They say the conversation was trapped in the stratosphere all these years. Is that time travel? I don't know, but that's a great story. We'll be back in a moment with our guest, Dr. Cliff Pickover, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Cliff, back to, if we can, DMT for just a moment, then onward to some other topics. It's unusual, is it not, that so many people who use it, whether it's experimental, in testing, seem to see similar things, these cities, these strange-looking creatures. That's weird, isn't it?
That's what I think is one of the most important and interesting aspects of DMT and the mind. When you give this dimethyltryptamine, in various settings, you see these common themes. And again, it's these jeweled cities, sparkling palaces, shiny objects, temples, and even some biblical imagery. But it's seen by users in the city, in the country, different cultures, different languages, and people with no expectations at all. And the other interesting thing is that people see these things called, typically that we call them machine elves, these elf-like creatures that they get the sense are tending the fabric of reality. If we could do more research, I mean, there's been some research on this, but if we could do more, it would be fascinating to see if we could interact with these beings. And again, whether they're part of our mind or have some kind of independent existence, either of these things would be fascinating to know because we're going to learn more about reality. If we learn more about the mind is a filter through which we see reality, and in any case, I think more research needs to be done on it.
Terrence McKenna used to talk about this, DMT, and I think Dennis also does now. Is that true?
Yes, I talk about them in my book. They, of course, were very interested in this. Dr. Rick Strassman, another person who actually administered DMT in a clinical setting, he has some theories that say that, you know, we do have a naturally occurring amount of DMT in our mind, in our brains already, and maybe we have a certain amount without it. The reality would seem a little too flat, you know, too much. We break through into this machine elf realm that we've been discussing. But it's just fascinating that so few molecules of this substance could just alter our perception of reality.
Really?
And there's no guarantee that we are perceiving reality in its truest form, whatever that might mean, without exploring other options, whether it's computers, as we said, or literature, or even some of these unusual psychoactive drugs.
Okay, now I'm very curious to get your take, Cliff, on the theory of the Big Bang, how you think our universe started.
Well, the current thinking is that, you know, about 13 billion years ago, there was a Big Bang that created our universe. The universe seems to be expanding at an accelerating rate right now. There may be multiple Big Bangs and multiple universes. But one of the most interesting things about our universe is that it seems to be finely tuned to permit life to evolve. And this is something called the anthropic principle, where there are these certain physical parameters of the universe that seem to be almost near miracles. And as an example, you know, the element carbon, which seems to be important for life, is manufactured in stars. And the nuclear reactions of stars seem very delicately poised to permit carbon formation. And the universe expansion after the Big Bang, if we look just 1 second after the Big Bang and we make the expansion rate smaller by one part in 100,000,000,000,000, the universe would just recollapse. So there's all these physical parameters that seem to be very remarkably poised to allow life and even stars to shine.
Yeah, they're saying that this James Webb telescope that goes up 2011, I think, will allow them to probably see the Big Bang itself. Do you agree with that? Is that possible?
Well, as you can look further and further in space, you're in a sense looking back in time, because it takes light and any signal a time to reach us. So the more we can peer into space, the more we can get information about the shape of our universe, and the more information we can get about the Big Bang.
Well, it is. It's dramatic all by itself. Now, of course, the big question is, because of beliefs of so many people, Cliff, about intelligent design, God, call it what you may, something's out there. Do you think this universe was accidental? All these wonderful pieces that are in there that seem to work, I mean, they fit like a puzzle. That it wasn't designed, because if it wasn't, this got to be one of the luckiest universes in the universe.
Yeah, in fact, we're trying to sell a book right now that talks about intelligent design versus evolution and whether our universe is designed. You know, and again, so much has to come together for life to form. So much has to come together even with our Earth. You know, our Earth has liquid water. It has a fixed axis of rotation that helps stabilize the climate. It has a magnetic field that maintains the ozone layer. It has a moon that produces tides, which may have been important in evolution for creatures to bridge from the sea to the land. That a lot has to come together to permit us to evolve. However, I do think evolution is a pretty good theory that we should subscribe to. And when, you know, we talk about school systems trying to either knock out evolution or put it on par with intelligent design, for now I'm staying on the side of evolution and these physical laws allowing.
Well, of course, you know, evolution and physical laws do not mean there wasn't intelligent design. A lot of people don't seem to understand that. Just because there was progression and slash evolution doesn't mean it wasn't created by intelligence.
That's true. And in fact, the universe being so finely tuned with all these physical constants that allow stars to shine and so forth, who knows what, you know, who established or what established these physical laws? We don't know. And again, some of the theories of parallel universes say there may be infinite numbers of universes, some that permit life, some that are dead because they don't allow stars to shine and so forth. And it's amazing we live in a time where scientists can actually probe the universe and look at cosmology and actually start answering and asking some of these questions that, you know, would be very hard 100 years ago.
Are you perplexed by this intelligent design?
I am perplexed by many awesome mysteries of the universe. I'm perplexed by the human brain. I'm perplexed that the human brain, which really, in my mind, help us to evolve, you know, help us run from lions on the African savannah. How could it be that this same brain now allows us to do calculus and study black holes? In a sense, we have to be kind of humble and wonder about how much of the universe we may be shielded from with our 3-pound brain that we can't possibly contemplate. But I don't think we have to lose hope, because I believe computers and humans will become closer and closer over the centuries, and with brain augmentation and drugs and all the types of things we've been discussing, that we're not necessarily limited in our knowledge, but we can take some of these other devices to help tear away the veils that we want to allow us to see beyond this curtain.
If you could collect brains, that's kind of morbid, but if you could collect brains and bring them back later, put them in other bodies and let them function, whose brains would you collect?
We'd certainly like to see what Einstein can do. In the book I talk about, I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but his brain was actually removed without permission when he died. And for a while, scientists wondered, where is this brain? And it turned out it was kept in a jar behind a beer cooler in Kansas. This was a man who performed the autopsy, and his ex-wife said, you know, I wish someone would get rid of that damn thing. And finally, we have been able to do studies on Einstein's brain. And, you know, some people see more certain cells in some areas and less in others, and certain parts of his brain were bigger than others. His brain as a whole seemed to be within the normal range, but I believe that, you know, what we are is our brain, and consciousness arises from our brain. And by studying brains and simulating brains with computers, we'll probably someday be able actually to download our consciousness to computers and live happy and virtual lives in machines.
Now, you wouldn't want to, let's say, what if you like collected these brains, and maybe you collected the brain of, Jeffrey Dahmer, for example. What if you got them mixed up, for crying out loud?
That would be scary. And if we ever are able to simulate realities and download our minds to brains, imagine to computing devices. Imagine the terrible things if you let someone into these simulated realities that could, you know, do torture, and it would be difficult to escape.
Do you believe in life after death, Cliff?
Well, the book I'm working on now is all on technology and the afterlife. I'm seeking a publisher for that too. You know,
how many are you working on?
You know, because I publish these 30 books, people say, "Cliff, and you know, you must have an in with the publisher."
Yeah, I would think so.
It's always a challenge. In fact, I have a whole chapter in the book that's quite fun on the challenges of book publishing. In fact, I lead the book with 2 pages of quotes from publishers who rejected this very book that's doing well. You know, and we're discussing it, and I'm very happy with it, but publishing is a very tricky and artful thing. You know, so many books have been, even this Proust that I talk about, you know, he couldn't get it published yet. It's been one of the most successful books of all time, but he couldn't get it published.
I bet they did not expect the Da Vinci Code to pop 35 million copies, maybe more by now. I bet they didn't even think of that.
Yeah, well, if you go back in history, things like War and Peace and Moby Dick, they were all, had trouble. And in fact, when they're submitted untitled to test the submission process today, they're always rejected. And my favorite anecdote, there's an author who retyped Steps by Jerzy Kaczynski. Now, this book was originally published by Random House. It was a bestseller, National Book Award, sold over 500,000 copies. The guy basically retyped it, sent it to 30 agents and publishers. All rejected it, including Random House, who published it and got the book award. So publishing is something I talk about in the book, tricks to getting published, different, you know, I talk about the book itself and this Sex, Drugs, Einstein, and Ellis book, its route to publishing. I love the publishing field, and it's almost a game you have to play to try to get hooked up with the right publishers.
Absolutely.
If you persevere, you usually end up.
And once you click, you click. I've been in the mix right now, as a matter of fact. Hey, Daniel Brinkley, a great guest of Coast to Coast and friend, has sent me a message, a fast blast, and would like to know if you think near-death experiences fit as a conceptual perceptive in dealing with parallel universes. Do you think there's any relationship there?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, near-death experiences are fascinating because we see many people who see these visions of heaven, and interestingly enough, there are some who see hellish visions, which we maybe hear less about. People even see this silver cord that seems to bind the person to some reality beyond. Now, whether these are truly the parallel universes of the physicists, it's hard to know, but I know, for example, with the DMT drug research, there are people who think we're actually accessing a kind of parallel universe that's not far from these ones that are contemplated by physicists.
The Bible talks about 7 heavens. Possible that these are steps of parallel universes, maybe other dimensions?
Well, the Bible also talks about these sparkling realms of New Jerusalem. They talk about certain mysterious visions, which are very similar to those seen under
DMT.
And it makes you wonder what these things all have in common, you know, with the mind. Are we accessing something that we all seem to have within us, but only some of us under certain circumstances get glimpses of?
Wouldn't it be disappointing if there was no other universes? If there were no other universes, wouldn't it be difficult if there was no heaven, if none of the extra spiritual things we've talked about for years merely didn't exist, it was only a function of the brain? That, to me, would be disappointing. Maybe one of the biggest disappointments of my life, Cliff. What about yours?
If we say that there's no spiritual realm, it is a little disappointing. But, you know, the universe is so vast. People talk about that, you know, scientists are very certain, or most of them are certain, that there are these higher spatial dimensions. And, in fact, if the universe is infinite, which is quite a possibility, then our visible universe that we have is actually replicated infinite amount of time. So there are other universes where me and you are talking right now, but with just slight differences. You know, we once you say universe is infinite, all sorts of possibilities become actualized. And, you know, the limits that we see now about accessing these other possible universes, they're going to be removed in the next century because of technology and advances that we can't contemplate possibly.
Well, it is something I believe. I've always been a believer. I think some of it has to do with faith, because I don't have the true proof that one should have, but I do believe that things exist. I believe in angels, for example. I believe that there is life after death. But heck, you know what, Cliff? I don't know. You know, when I close my eyes for that last time, you know, I think that there's going to be something out there, but who knows? Who truly knows? Does that ever bother you? You're afraid of dying because of that?
Yes, I am afraid of dying, especially if you're unsure of existence after this realm. It does give you a sense of fear. You know,
it does.
This is all there is. Can we still be happy? And I think we can be happy.
See, I hope they didn't invent this. Societies have way gone back. To minimize that fear, to make us feel better.
Well, in some sense, also, life is going to change quite a bit in this century, because I believe we will become immortal. We're going to understand the biological basis of aging. There's no reason why people have to age, and we're understanding so much about biology. I am certain that we're going to basically achieve a kind of immortality. And I believe also that when we understand the mind to a greater degree, you know, we're already simulating minds on computers, primitive portions of the mind, that we will be able to download ourselves to software and become immortal that way, and explore entirely new universes of emotion and perception and senses. So technological advance is not necessarily an unspiritual advance. We may be drawing closer to spirituality through technology, and we're certainly becoming a more connected planet because of technology. I'm talking to you. I'm every day on the internet. We're becoming one world in many ways.
This book, Sex, Drugs, Einstein, and Elves, how do you get it?
You can get it at Amazon.com, at bookstores. You can learn more at my website, pickover.com, which lists all my books. And you'll see the beautiful cover of Sex, Drugs, Einstein,
and Elves.
Did
you design that cover?
What's that?
Did you design the cover?
I designed it in conjunction with the publisher. It's a kind of eye-catching cover.
I kind of figure you would, because you've got that background, right?
Yeah, I do. I have done a lot of computer graphics and fractals. I'm very interested in the fact that beauty can come from mathematics, and I've actually written lots of books on popular books on mathematics and what it all means.
Well, I tell you what, when we come back, we'll continue talking with you, Cliff, about this. Phone calls at the top of the hour, but fast blast questions in between. So those of you who have been sending me messages, if you have anything specific you want me to ask Cliff, let's do so right now. I'll be back in a moment. We'll take fast blast questions for the next 30 minutes right here on Coast to Coast AM. And if you need to email me, well, that's simple too. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. And make sure you spell out the word T-O between coast to coast, then add the A-M. It's that simple. I'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. Well, if you've been watching your network television shows and your cable shows today, and they've been showing you these wildfires in Southern California, well, we're right by it. And we can smell the smoke when we go outside. Some of the ash from all the burning stuff out there is falling on cars and everything else. And in some cases, if you hold a light up, it falls like small snowflakes. It's almost like being in a volcano area. And My gosh, this is probably what would happen 100 times worse if Mount St. Helens ever bursts or Yellowstone goes. But it's really very strange. But those fires are indeed happening, and they're getting to homes now, too. And the firefighters a couple hours ago had it only contained by 5%. That's not contained at all. So we'll continue watching that. That's going to happen for the next couple days. Hopefully by the weekend, the temperatures out here will cool down a little bit. And you know what? I tell you what, if it continues, I may break stride a little bit, and we might do one of those wish for rain things tomorrow night, but we'll talk about that. We'll be back in a moment. Fast Blast questions now. They're lining up. Cliff Pickover, our guest. Phone calls at the top of the hour, so get ready. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie, our guest. Dr. Cliff Pickover is our guest. Cliff, James from Cincinnati wants to know, how does science explain the feeling of deja vu in the human mind, where a human feels like they've been there in one instance of time? Is this our parallel self catching up with real time? What do you think?
Well, the brain is certainly mysterious, and slight differences in chemicals and structure can cause all sorts of feeling. Deja vu is one of them. There are a host of other remarkable experiences and syndromes that I talk about in the book that I think are even more fascinating in deja vu. One is called Charles Bonnet syndrome, where people see beings, particularly beings wearing hats, and it looks like this is an eye disorder where the eye...
call them shadow people.
Yeah, well, this is something that psychiatrists and doctors have investigated. The eye seems to be getting less input because these people are not seeing well, and they start seeing these whole universes filled with these, again, elf-like creatures that we talked about with DMT drug. And people see these things as utterly real. They'll see an elf sitting on a real tree stump.
Or they see Charles Bonnet
syndrome. I'll give you one more. I have a whole cool list.
Hold on. What is that called again?
Charles Bonnet syndrome, B-O-N-N-E-T, where people see these little beings, and they're afraid to tell their doctors about it because they feel that they'll be, you know, thought they were crazy. But it's a well-known syndrome in the psychiatric literature, and we think there's a organic cause for it. But why do people see elves with hats? You know, something fresh out of Lord of the Rings.
Did they say that these beings are also shadowy?
They take on different forms. Some are pretty clear. Some are shadowy. They're seeing with the subject's eyes open, so I might be looking out over my backyard, and I'll suddenly see a parade of elves walking by.
Weird.
That look real in many cases, and they're superimposed on the landscape.
I'm going to look into this.
Another one is capgrass syndrome. That seems to be almost like a parallel universe in which family members are seen as doubles or imposters. So let's say you wake up one morning, you look at your wife or kid or dog, and you have this gut-wrenching feeling that even though they look identical to your wife and kids, that they're imposters or doubles. And it seems to be part of the brain that, you know, may be having a problem, and this is called capgrass syndrome. And I could discuss all sorts of unusual psychiatric disorders that have been discovered through the decades that toy with our notion of reality.
Of course, then again, who's to say that's not real?
That's right. And how do we know that the brain is actually tuned to see real? Why do we think that we evolve with the perfect sense of what is real, what is reality? You know, you might say, well, of course, we evolved to help us survive, and that puts us in touch with reality, but not necessarily the case. Let's be wild now. Let's say there was a creature out there that every time you looked at caused you to die. Well, eventually you'd evolve only creatures who couldn't sense that creature. Or night vision goggles, right? There's someone hiding on the other side of the tree. You can't see. You put on these goggles, augment your senses, and you see reality as it truly is, that you couldn't see without some technology. So there's no reason to think that we're perfectly engineered to see reality as it is.
Mike from Merced, California, Cliff, wants to know, Could we really transfer our consciousness into a machine or simply copy it, leaving the current us stuck in our bodies? Is that possible?
Well, we can't do that now, but I think that in the future, because we're understanding so much about the mind, that we'll be able to simulate the mind. We'll be able to take whatever it is, once we know all the neuronal patterns. You know, if we believe that the mind arises from the patterns in the brains, you know, in my mind, there's no reason why we couldn't, in theory, simulate that with bicycle parts. Now, you'd need huge planets filled with bicycle parts to simulate something that is thinking, but I believe that our minds could be simulated in the flocking of birds or the movements of leaves, because I believe it's the patterns and connections that make us think and conscious.
Lawrence of Dallas, Texas, the science of life of India is very ancient, states that the people come in three body types, that a person's consciousness is partially dictated by which one they were born into. Have you come across any of this in your research, the ancient science of life stating that people come in three body types?
I know there's been various theories through the ages about body types and ectomorphs and endomorphs and that tying to personality, but I don't really know how scientific that is. It seems like it's very hard to look at people. It's even hard to look at people's brains and know how smart they are, what personalities they're going to have. So I don't know too much about body types. I just know that people have thought about that, everything from looking at bumps on the head to, you know, your whether you're heavy or light, and that controlling your outlook and your emotions. So there's definitely been a lot of thought about that.
Here's a little advice question you're going to have to help Allison out of Louisville, Kentucky. She says, I'm currently going to college, but not majoring in my true dream, which is physics. I'm afraid that I would not be smart enough to major in that field, even though nothing in life excites me more than physics. I love it. Any advice? All right, help her out on that one.
That's a question I get all the time. I frequently go to schools and try to interest kids in the wonders of science and engineering. Physics, of course, is a difficult field, you know, to excel in unless you're the cream of the crop. It's difficult to make money in unless you're the cream of the crop. I would suggest anyone like her interested in physics should pursue it, but also get interested in all the allied fields like computing. Physicists, like almost all fields of knowledge today, rely heavily on computers. So while this person is learning physics, learn about computers, learn about writing. You know, maybe she'll be like me and be a physics writer at some point.
Is it possible that through the use of DMT, now this is Scott from Mesa, Arizona, might be a key that our brain actually uses to contact the universe of the intelligent designer? What do you think of that?
Well, DMT definitely puts us in touch with something, something that is beyond our ordinary perception. And it is clear that many people who have experimented with DMT return with the certainty that consciousness continues after death. It just gives them that certainty. And they seem to feel that it's as if there's lifting a veil, so that when DMT is taken, it's not that it's distorting reality, but it's revealing something hidden that is all around us. So people definitely get that sense, and I hope that we can continue to do more research on DMT to better understand all these mysteries that we've been talking about tonight.
Here's one from Buzz, who's with the chat room, NighthawkZone.com. Heavy supporters of Coast to Coast. He lives in Waukegan, Illinois. Any evidence? This is a tough one for you. Any evidence that would lead us to believe that human DNA was manufactured by intelligent beings? What do you think of that?
I mean, it's remarkable that DNA evolved in the first place. You know, it looks like there's biological chemicals throughout the universe, and that the universe is poised to permit primitive life. But the genetic code is fascinating. We can learn so much from it. I don't know if we can say one way or the other whether it's designed, or it's quite likely that it could have evolved given millions and billions of years to produce a creature like us. Though I do speculate in some of my books, you know, what would happen if we did find a message in the DNA? How would that affect our outlook if suddenly we saw the digits of pi encoded or a message from the stars? That's certainly a fascinating thing to contemplate, because DNA would be a place where messages could be placed by a vast intelligence that we wouldn't be able to uncover until we develop the technology, which we are currently developing, that allows us to sequence DNA and use computers to analyze the patterns within it.
Could you accept the belief that extraterrestrial beings came down on this planet thousands and thousands of years ago, genetically altered, Cro-Magnon man, Neanderthal man, and we became who we are now?
I believe all these theories are possible. However, I haven't picked one over the other. You know, it's possible that Cro-Magnon man evolved in a natural way due to the laws of physics. But as you said, it doesn't go, it's not outside the law of physics to say that an alien race has come and engineered us. And in fact, there's all these theories of panspermia, which say that the Earth was seeded. Maybe not the Cro-Magnon thing, but maybe the ancient bacteria itself could have been seeded from outer space. That's not such a weird idea, that life came from comets or from other places outside of the Earth.
What do you mean by tending the fabric of time? What does that mean?
Tending the fabric of time. This is the feeling that users get when they take DMT, that there are these machine elves that are working in these vast machine complexes or these vast sparkling palaces that are somehow working on reality, that are somehow monitoring it. We still don't know what all this means. Why do people have these feelings? How much truth is there to this? How much is it their imagination? But whatever it is, we need to explore it.
Out of Seattle, Washington, Charlie, first-time Fast Blaster, wants to know if you can name any current upcoming scientific developments that the people are working on, science is working on, to the end of biological immortality. Mortality, I guess, I want to create immortality.
Yes. Well, people are constantly exploring the biological basis of aging and the genetics that control that. And of course, we have already created mice and worms that have lived far longer than their natural lifespan by understanding the aging. And as we talked about in an earlier hour, people are also looking at genes that control our senses and that seem to control our access to reality. We talk about a mouse. You just knock out a gene that is there and suddenly smells 1,000 times more. It's more sensitive. You know, what aspects of the universe could we sense differently or better if these reality-restricting genes or breaks were removed?
Well, it's fun talking to you, by the way, Cliff. I want to tell you that even before we get into it. James from Valdosta, Georgia, wants to know if you've ever heard of John Titor. If you haven't, I'll tell you a little bit about him.
Time traveler sort of fellow,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's him.
Yes, I've heard about him. I don't know much about him, but perhaps I have a similar thing. In the very last page of my book, I have an experiment with time travelers where I leave an empty box on the page and I say, given current trends and scientific progress, someday it may be possible for beings in the future to access our reality through time travel or travel through parallel universe. And I invite them to insert a message in my blank box. And I end the book with, we await the appearance of a message. So let's see, when your listeners get the book, they can turn to the last page and see if that box has anything in it.
Alex from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, wants to know if there's any scientific basis for EVPs. That's, of course, electronic voice phenomena.
Yes, and I've seen the movies, and I know a lot of people think that if you play these blank tapes long enough, you'll pick up something. At this point, you know, I don't know how much the human mind is creating, because the human mind is very good at taking noise and noisy signals and creating something from it. So I know people are wondering about it, and I personally don't know if it's just the human mind or not. I know, for example, with backwards messages and record albums, sometimes I think we might go a little too far, because the human mind can make out all sorts of things in random noise like ink blots. And it tells us a lot about the mind.
A lot of people would like to know if you believe in God.
Belief in God, you know, depends a lot on our definition of God. We mentioned that some people believe in a God that protected the Israelites and ordered them to slaughter every man, woman, and child, you know, of their enemies. you know, maybe that God is harder to believe in than for me than a God that established the mathematical physical parameters that set up the universe. But what brings me the closest to God is the fact that I believe that our mind, our brain, limits us. Again, the monkey brain is similar to ours, and it can't understand calculus and black holes. What aspects of the universe are shielded from us because of our 3-pound massive brain? That puts us in touch with mystery, which I think we can liken to God.
I'm going to paraphrase a question from Aaron Paul from Montreal, Quebec. He wants to know about traveling at the speed of light or beyond. Will it ever be possible?
Well, that was one of Einstein's greatest contributions. He thought a lot about high-speed travel and the speed of light. It looks like the speed of light sets a limit to our travel. And, of course, as you go faster and faster, it becomes very difficult, at least according to Einstein, because your mass increases and you need more and more energy. But scientists do talk about all sorts of things at the speed of light and even beyond light speed, one of them being something called a tachyon, which is a hypothetical particle, may exist, that is born traveling faster than the speed of light, and because of that, it appears to be traveling back in time. Again, the amazing thing is that all these seemingly crazy ideas are now being thought about seriously by physicists, and we're now gradually getting the equipment and computers and technology to actually explore some of these ideas we couldn't have dreamed of exploring 100 years ago or even 20 years ago.
Well, Carly from Seattle writes back to say, you made my week by reading my fast blast, but I just wanted to hear you say my name. It's Carly, not Charlie. Correction made. Donna from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Do any of these people who see these things get the feeling that the elf beings see back at them? Now, that's a good question.
Yeah, in fact, I've interviewed people who interact with these elves, and they do try to get information. I mean, that's the goal. Can these beings provide us with something that we don't already know? So they can have conversations with these elf-like beings sometimes. And we need to do more research to see what those types of conversations reveal. I mean, it's a very alien experience as you enter these sparkling palaces and see these machine elves, and I think we need more research. I also think research in dreams and lucid dreams is quite fascinating, where people can control their own dreams.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we give exercises every once in a while, Cliff, with guests who are experts in dream research, and it wouldn't be something to be able to teach people that if they realize they're in a dream, to control the outcome.
Yes, and there's even devices that help you. These people have manufactured these goggles you put on that sense that you're entering dream sleep and then light up a bright orange color, and in your dream through your eyelids, and in your dream you see this orange color, and it's kind of reminds you, okay, I'm dreaming now, start taking control of the dream.
You believe in ESP, extrasensory perception?
Well, I do start out everything with skepticism, and I know we can be very easily fooled. I have a whole ESP test on my website that is actually a clever trick in disguise, and many people fall for it. So I don't believe in extrasensory perception without a lot of evidence. I know there is some preliminary evidence, but for now I want us to continue to do more research on that to figure it out.
Okay, well, now we'll move into the question phase with the phones. So we'll be right back. My gosh, they're already lit up. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with our special guest, Dr. Cliff Pickover. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.